Sie hören SBS German.
Herzlich willkommen zum Podcast Abenteuer lesen.
Ich renne. Wellen beißen sich in den Sand, während ich einen Fuß vor den anderen zwinge. Hochkämpfen, ausrutschen und wieder hochkämpfen. Schneller, den Blick auf die Dünen vor mir fixiert. Nicht zurückschauen. Ich darf nicht zurückschauen. Mein Atem geht keuchend. Ein, aus, ein, aus. Ich renne immer weiter. Gerade als meine Lungen und mein Herz explodieren wollen, ein blutroter Stern auf dem Sand. Ich stolpere. Ein Mann dreht sich um. Er zieht mich hoch und drängt mich weiter. Es kommt näher. Meine Beine geben unter mir nach und ich falle wieder. Ich kann nicht mehr laufen. Er geht in die Knie, hält mich fest und sieht mir in die Augen. Es ist Zeit. Schnell jetzt. Bau die Wand auf. Näher. Also baue ich sie. Stein um Stein, Reihe um Reihe. Ein hoher Turm, wie der von Rapunzel, aber ohne Fenster, keine Öffnung, durch die ich mein Haar herunterlassen könnte. Keine Hoffnung auf Rettung. Vergiss nie, wer du bist, ruft der Mann, packt mich an den Schultern und schüttelt mich heftig. Der Schock fegt das Meer weg, den Sand. Seine Worte, die Flecken auf meinen Armen und den Schmerz in meiner Brust und in meinen Beinen. Es ist da.
Das war ein Ausschnitt aus Gelöscht, ein Thriller, Jugendthriller von der englischen Jugendbuchautorin Terry Terry. Und wer hat es vorgelesen? Natürlich niemand anderer als Eva Murer. Hier im Podcast Abenteuer lesen. Hallo Eva.
Hallo Adrian.
Ich bin Adrian Plitzko und wir stellen eigentlich Bücher vor, Kinderbücher, die lehrreich und spannend sind. Spannung haben wir, lehrreich wahrscheinlich auch. Aber kein Kinderbuch, sondern heute ist es ein Jugendbuch. Nicht für Kinder zu empfehlen, weil es da ziemlich an die Sache geht bei diesem Buch. Ja? Also es ist ja fast eine schreckliche Zukunftsvision.
Ja, es ist sehr, sehr düster an manchen Stellen.
Warum hast du dieses Buch dir ausgesucht?
Ich habe die Autorin Terry Terry in Frankfurt kennengelernt und habe auch die zwei Bücher, die wir heute vorstellen, selbst gelesen und habe sie einfach so spannend gefunden. Die haben mich einfach reingezogen in die Geschichte. Vor allem das zweite, auf das wir dann später noch näher eingehen werden. Ich war wirklich fasziniert von den beiden Büchern als Erwachsene und kann sie wirklich auch allen nur empfehlen. Also es ist nicht nur ein Jugendbuch, finde ich, sondern es macht auch für Erwachsene spannende Leseliteratur.
Also ab jugendlichem Alter.
Ja.
Also zwei hast du mitgebracht, vorgelesen hast du aus Gelöscht und wir werden sicher vom anderen Buch auch noch was hören. Exit Now heißt es, das kam nach Gelöscht heraus, ist aber sozusagen ein Prequel zu Gelöscht. Also die hängen zusammen, diese Bücher.
Exit Now hat natürlich mehr Bezug zu, was jetzt gerade passiert, weil der Hintergrund ist ja, dass England sich von Europa abspaltet und quasi eine virtuelle Mauer um sich herum baut und was dann passiert. Also die Idee des Buches oder der Bücher ist entstanden, da war Brexit noch überhaupt kein Thema, aber es ist im Grunde ein Brexit-Szenario. Und im Gespräch mit Terry Terry haben wir natürlich auch darüber gesprochen.
Ja, und das Gespräch, das fand an der Frankfurter Buchmesse statt, wie du vorhin gesagt hast. Nun, ich selber habe von Terry Terry eigentlich noch nichts gehört. Wer ist sie denn? Woher kommt sie?
Am besten lassen wir das Terry Terry gleich selbst erklären.
I have lived in a lot of different places. Introduced myself, my dad was born in the Netherlands. My mother's family is from Finland. My mum was born in Canada and I was born in France. And then I was raised in Canada, moved to Australia and then moved to England. So I lived in Australia, I think we were working this out before, it was 13 or 14 years. But I've lived in England now since 2005. The kind of books I write thrillers. sort of aimed at teenagers, though people of all ages seem to enjoy them. The most famous would be the Slated Trilogy, which is Galoscht in German, and it's about a future UK where the UK has left the EU and closed borders and become isolationist, which sounds a little bit like what's happening in the world at the moment. But I wrote this starting back in 2009 when it wasn't really even a thing.
Well, the world you built around it is like Brexit, but in a very dark way. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay. Exit Now is the title in German. In the UK, it's called Fated. It's a prequel to Slated. And I think when I finished writing the Slated trilogy, going back a few years now, because they came out from 2012 to 2014, Brexit wasn't a word yet, and no one really thought it could ever happen, even when the referendum took place. But because that's kind of the backstory for Slated, I kept wanting to sort of go back and think, could something like that actually happen in a country like the UK, that things could go that wrong, and how would it happen? So it's kind of, it sounds a lot like it's about Brexit, but it's in a wider sense. It's really just about a democracy sort of disintegrating and, you know, becoming a totalitarian regime. So it wasn't really trying to take what's happening in the real world. It's just the real world has kind of been imitating me, strangely. It's a bit frightening, actually. But I suppose the whole thing about making the UK leave the EU and close borders and be isolationist was really because the story needed an isolated society. And, you know, the UK being an island, cutting it off from Europe made it an isolated society. And that sort of worked for the story. I never in a million years thought that was something that was ever likely to happen when I was writing it, though.
You said it was your ninth novel you wrote, but the first one that got published. How is the feeling writing eight novels and at not getting through, and then with the ninth having this success, because it's a huge success?
Most writers I know have similar tales, maybe not as many as nine, but most of us write for a long time before we get to the place where we get published. And it's not just about learning how to write, though of course that's part of it. I think you have to be lucky to hit on something that just appeals to people at a particular time. And quite often you could, you know, I know people that this has happened to, where they've written something that is really good, but it's just too like something else that she didn't know anything about, so it didn't get published. So there's a lot of luck involved. But I think as a writer trying to get published, it's kind of part of it is being rejected. You're kind of used to it. So a lot of the time I was kind of okay with it. I mean, it's not nice being rejected, but I was getting feedback, you know, which you don't always get, and saying, you know, I liked this, but I didn't like that, or all kinds of, I had a few publishers that were interested in things, but then didn't take them on. I think the only time I can remember getting sort of really down about it was a year or so before Slated got picked up. I actually had two things that I'd written that were out. One was with an agent who'd asked for the full manuscript and was considering it. And another book that I'd written, a completely different one, was with a publisher. And they sort of for a younger series for younger children. And they went to the stage where they were testing it on parents, teachers and children, and then they decided not to take it. And I got both of those two rejections at about the same time. And I think that's probably the one time I just found it hard to take, because I think even though I know that's part of the whole process, you know, being rejected is normal when you're a writer, I think because there were two of them out at the same time, I'd somehow convinced myself that one of them would get taken. So when neither of them did, that was a hard one. But I think I decided at that point that the next thing I wrote, which, you know, more or less was Slated, there might have been a few bits in between, that I was just going to not worry whether anyone wanted it or not. I was going to write it as best as I could and send it to everybody, which is something I'd never done. I think a lot of the things I wrote, I'd had maybe four or five rejections, and then I would just put it away and give up, you know, which is not to be advised, maybe. I mean, I'm actually glad that it waited till Slated, because I think, you know, it was stronger than some of the other things that might have been published. And your first book is so important in this business, because if your first book doesn't do well, it quite often is your last.
So is there any chance that you revisit your eight novels and try to publish them?
So the ones that I've written before Slated that haven't been published, I would say most of them there's no chance I would go back to, but there are a couple that I'd kind of like to. But I think, I mean, writing a long novel that's, you know, 400 pages takes a fair bit of time and attention. And so it might sound funny to say this, but I've actually got quite a short attention span, and I find it really hard to go back to things just for that reason. I don't really like picking things apart that I've already done. I'd rather just write something new. So even though I, in theory, kind of would like to revisit a few of them, I don't know that I ever will.
I'm pretty sure this is a question you get asked a lot. What inspired you to
become an author and to stay an author with all the rejections and uncertainty around it?
I think I've got the best job there is. I make up things and mostly wear my pajamas during the day. I don't have to go to an office, you know. I really do enjoy what I do. I love the process of writing. I also, you have to sort of get the right balance between doing events and being at home writing. But I like both, you know, just at different times. So for me, it's just something that I really love doing. And I think, you know, even if I stopped being published, I'd probably still be writing, even if not as much. It's just something I enjoy doing. But I can remember the first time that I thought I'd like to be an author. I was actually 17, so that's quite a few years ago. We won't dwell on how many, but it was quite a long time ago. And it was something that I've always wanted to do. And I think I've always loved stories and I've always loved reading. And it might be partly because when I was growing up, we moved around a lot. And my dad was in the Air Force in Canada. So we were always moving, new schools. And I think when you don't know anyone, the school library is quite a nice place to hang out, you know. So I think that there's probably part of the reason for that. But I just always loved making up stories. You know, even when I wasn't writing, I was making up things in my head. So it's just something that's always really been part of me, I think.
Growing up with a multicultural family and everyone being from different countries and then moving to another country, how was it for you as a child to have that background and this multi ways of languages and cultural backgrounds? How was it for you? And does that influence your writing as well and your ideas?
Okay. I think as a child, you just accept the way your life is. You don't question it. It was just normal for me to be moving all the time. And, you know, we knew lots of other people that were Air Force kids like I was. We used to call base brats. We were base brats. So it was just normal. So it's not something I questioned. And I think when you're, it depends on the child very much, of course. But I think when I was younger, too, like being in different class in a different school wasn't as much of a problem as when I got a bit older. And I think the first time it probably really started to bother me was when I was in high school. But I actually was lucky that we stayed in one place in Nova Scotia when I went to high school, so I had 3 years in one school then. But that was the time I didn't really want to move away from there, but my family was moving and I was 17, so what do? You know, I sort of had to go. As far as how it affected my writing, I think it has, but I think it's in a way that I didn't always understand to start with. And everything that I've written, I suppose this is probably very true of young adult fiction in general, that it's very much about searching for identity and that kind of thing. And I think that's really quite personal because the character Kyla is very much an exaggeration of that because she's had her memory wiped. So she doesn't know anything about her past or where she fits in or anything. And in a way, it's kind of like an exaggeration of what it was like growing up as myself, sort of always reinventing yourself everywhere you went. So I think there's a lot of truth to the fact that that enters into my stories. So even though the characters aren't anything like me personally, some of the issues they have probably are, you know, whether I intended it or not, they're just there.
What helps you go into the teenage mind? Because reading your books, I had the feeling you are a teenager while you're writing it. What did help to get into this mindset and to bring it on the paper in a such a realistic in the sense of realistic teenage feelings and thought processes?
To be fair, I think it just comes very naturally to me to have that sort of age voice. And, you know, when I was learning to write all those other books I was writing, I tried writing for lots of different age groups. I tried writing some adult things, which never really seemed to work that well for me. I tried writing some really young fiction, some middle grade as well. But as soon as I started writing teenage voices, it was just very natural. So I would actually quite like to write something younger at some point, but it's not natural in the same way. So I would have to, it would be much harder for me to get into the mind of a 10 or 11 year old than it is a 15 year old. Probably the hardest one I found personally writing voice was in the Contagion trilogy, Dark Matter trilogy. In the second book, I think it starts with the teenage boy. So I was in an 18 year old boy's head and that was different. So that actually took me a while. I don't think it's as different as you think, because I think people are the same, basically, what they want and need and all the rest of it. But there were, it took me a long time to sort of feel like I got him right. But I think, I don't know, I'm just 14 in my head, I don't know what it is.
What is important for you that people know about your books, that they understand, or a message you want your readers to know?
I would say most of the time I'm not actually trying to get a message to them. It's more about the story. And there's obviously things in there that are things that I think, because you can't really avoid that when you write. And that's probably more true of Exit Now than the other ones, because this whole idea of people being apathetic and not voting and all the rest of it had me kind of enraged. And it's sort of things that are happening in the States and the UK in particular, again, just had me really angry. And I thought, I want people to be aware of what happens when they don't take an interest, aren't involved in politics. So that's probably the closest I've ever come to being really direct about what I was thinking. But I mean, I really just want people to enjoy my stories, probably more than anything else. You know, that's the most important thing to me. And I think also, you know, even I've never sort of approached it as trying to get a message across, but I think it's just getting into someone else's head and understanding someone's point of view, and it's a way of developing empathy. And it's just so important. So I think that's a huge part of it as well.
What books or what authors inspired you as a child, or which impacted most in your childhood?
There's a few that I would definitely mention. A huge for me was the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which I absolutely loved. And I read it over. I read it for the first time when I was 11. I got it as a birthday present and read it over and over and over again. The pages are wrecked and I still have it on my shelf in a box. And other books that I really, really loved were the Pern books, The Dragons of Pern by Anne McCaffrey. It's a sort of fantasy. And I, you know, I can still remember how they made me feel reading them. So there's one other book that I don't know who wrote it or what it was called, but it made an impression on me, because when I was, I'm trying to think how old I would have been, maybe 8 or 9, we had a book fair at school and we got to pick out a book ourselves. And I still remember that, being able to pick out a book and keeping it and reading it, and just how, you know, exciting that was for me. So, I mean, we used libraries hugely, but we didn't own a lot of books when I was growing up. So it was such a big deal. And I can actually remember the cover and the illustration and the story a bit, but not enough to ever work out what it was called, because I've tried a few times. But it's just something, I think there's something about owning a book for the first time that you really, I mean, that you've picked yourself, because I would have been given books before then, but that's the first time I think I remember picking a book out myself. So I remember that. But yeah, the Lord of the Rings and Anne McCaffrey's Pern books are ones that really stand out. But I read a lot of science fiction as well, so quite a lot of that.
Very impressive. Don't think I would have been able to do that as an 11-year-old.
It was just reading. When I was in year 4 of school, I'm trying to think how old I would be at year 4. I think it's probably similar to here, but our teacher read us The Hobbit, and I loved it. So it was just like 20 minutes reading every day or something like that. I think that's so important that they do that in schools. And I don't know if that happens in Australia, but there's been a lot of debate about whether they should make that an essential, so that they have to do it, so that otherwise it won't happen. But we loved it. My whole class loved it. He started trying to read us the first of the Lord of the Rings, and I think it was just a bit too much, and the interest was going, so they stopped. But when I switched schools, we started reading, they were reading The Hobbit again, and that's why I got into it. So my parents got me the set because I'd been into The Hobbit. So yeah, I was probably a bit young for it and probably got more out of it when I read it when I was a bit older.
What is after Exit? What comes next?
I am working on something new, but I'm not really supposed to talk about it yet. So it does involve climate change. I guess that's one thing that I can say, but I don't know. I think they might be announcing that next year, so we'll see.
Das war die englische Jugendbuchautorin oder Buchautorin, lassen wir mal so stehen, Terry Terry, im Gespräch mit dir, Eva, an der Frankfurter Buchmesse. Faszinierend. Genauso wie die Bücher.
Absolut, ja. Gehen wir nochmal auf das erste Buch Gelöscht zurück. Da will ich noch gerne ein bisschen was mehr erzählen dazu. Also es geht ja um Kyler, deren Gedächtnis gelöscht wurde. Und nach kommt sie aber drauf, was passiert ist. Ja, also es sind so wie Erinnerungsfetzen, die immer wieder auftauchen, oder Begegnungen, die sie hat mit anderen Menschen, die so ein Aha-Erlebnis auslösen, aber immer so ein bisschen so unterschwellig. Und sie kommt in eine Familie, wo ihr gesagt wird, das sind deine Eltern, aber sie kann sich natürlich nicht an sie erinnern. Und da möchte ich noch eine kleine Szene daraus vorlesen, einfach wie sie auch so begreift, was das eigentlich heißt. Also es geht jetzt in diesem Abschnitt um ein Gespräch, und da geht es um den Robert Armstrong, der angeblich bei einem Bombenanschlag ums Leben gekommen ist. Er blickte ruhig zu mir herüber und etwas huscht über sein Gesicht. Das Lächeln verschwindet aus seinen Augen. Er steht auf und holt sich eine braune Flasche aus dem Kühlschrank Dann setzt er sich wieder. Ja, ich kannte ihn. Er war ein Freund von mir, antwortet er tonlos, während er die Flasche öffnet. War er mein Bruder? Mac zuckt mit den Schultern und nimmt einen Schluck aus seiner Flasche. Kommt drauf an, wie man es betrachtet, schätze ich. Er war der Sohn der Mutter, die du jetzt hast. Die Mutter, die ich jetzt habe. Nicht meine wirkliche. Interessante Sichtweise, aber alle anderen bestehen darauf, dass sie meine Mom ist. Ich öffne den Mund, um ihn nach Robert zu fragen, aber er hebt die Hand. Das sind erstmal genug Fragen von dir.
Das war ein weiterer Ausschnitt aus dem Buch Gelöscht oder der englische Titel Slighted von Terry Terry. Das gibt ja noch ein Buch, eine Geschichte davor, die sie aber erst danach geschrieben hat. Aber das soll den Leser nicht berühren. Aber ich finde es immer faszinierend, dass man eine ganze Geschichte, eine Vorgeschichte erzählen kann zu einer Geschichte, die man schon geschrieben hat. Ist das eigentlich einfacher oder schwieriger? Das frage ich mich immer. Das hast du sie nicht gefragt, gell?
Das habe ich sie nicht gefragt. Ja. Aber ich glaube, die Idee zu diesem Prequel zu Exit Now, die hat es ja schon gegeben.
Ja, ja.
Also ich glaube, das war schon immer da, diese Idee zu diesem Buch.
Und das ist genauso spannend?
Oh,
ja, dann
absolut.
Gib uns doch ein Beispiel. Wir haben noch Zeit.
Gut. Also Exit wird aus der Sicht von zwei Mädchen erzählt, Sam und Eva. Und Sam ist die Tochter von einem sehr einflussreichen Politiker und Eva kommt eher aus der unteren Gesellschaftsschicht. Ihr Vater ist ein Taxifahrer. Und es wird immer gewechselt zwischen diesen beiden Perspektiven. Aber das Leben der beiden Mädchen kreuzt sich in einer Schule, weil die Eva ein Stipendium bekommt. Also die Szene ist gerade, dass Sam und Eva den Vater von Sam treffen. Aber da ist noch eine Person im Raum. Und zwar ist das die Oppositionspolitikerin Astrid. Und sie werden gefragt, was sie denn heute so alles gemacht haben. Und was habt ihr zwei heute gemacht, fragt Dad. Naturwissenschaften. Ich habe alle Aufgaben erledigt. Und wann hättest du sie abgeben sollen? Ich verdrehe die Augen. Heute. Aber heute war ja keiner da. Also sind alle zu spät. Hat das den ganzen Nachmittag in Anspruch genommen? Nein, aber wir haben auch noch die Nachrichten verfolgt und uns über die Wahl vom letzten Jahr unterhalten, sagt Eva. Und ich bin froh, dass sie mich unterbricht. Dad wäre sicher nicht begeistert, wenn er wüsste, dass ich stundenlang gezeichnet habe. Und lügen kann ich nicht gut. Großartig, eine politische Debatte. Hast du die Wahl verfolgt, Eva? Natürlich, es stand ja viel auf dem Spiel. Nicht viele junge Menschen interessieren sich dafür. Evas Blick wird ernst. Sie richtet sich gerade auf. Da täuschen sie sich. Wir dürfen zwar nicht wählen, aber die Ergebnisse haben wir trotzdem am Hals. Was hast du denn am Hals, das du gerne ändern würdest? Den Ausstieg aus Europa, die Schließung der Grenzen, die Abspaltung des Vereinigten Irlands, ökonomische Entscheidungen, die zum wirtschaftlichen Kollaps geführt haben, Kürzungen im Gesundheitsbereich, bei den Bibliotheken, Universitäten und im Sozialen. Autsch, sagt er. Willst du noch die Abschaffung der Monarchie mit auf die Liste setzen? Eva zuckt die Achseln. Das stört mich eigentlich nicht so. Wenn du die Wahl verfolgt hast, weißt du ja, dass meine Partei in den übrigen Punkten mit dir übereinstimmt. Mir kommt es wie ein Tennismatch vor. Aufschlag, Volley, Punkt. Es geht natürlich nicht so harmlos weiter, sage ich jetzt mal, sondern es eskaliert relativ rasch. Also es gibt Aufstände, es gibt Unruhen und im Zentrum dieser Unruhen sind Jugendliche, die sich selbst in die Luft sprengen.
Oh.
Also es wird ganz, ganz hart.
Ja.
Stirbt zum Beispiel auch, Evas Vater stirbt dabei, es gibt politische Umbrüche und den Jugendlichen wird die Schuld daran gegeben. Und zwar in den einzelnen Kapitelüberschriften gibt es quasi immer so einen Prolog, in dem diese Astrid Connor etwas, ein Zitat sozusagen von sich gibt und jemand anderer. Und das erste Zitat ist eben von Astrid Connor aus ihrem persönlichen Tagebuch. Und das zweite ist von Linnea Armstrong, Frau des Premierministers, ehemalige Bürgerrechtlerin. Also zuerst das von Astrid Connor. Um eine Gesellschaft wirklich zu einen, braucht man einen Sündenbock. hält in der Öffentlichkeit erstmal eine Wir-gegen-Sie-Mentalität Einzug, lassen sich die Ziele und Ideale eines Regimes leicht vorantreiben. Kommt uns irgendwie bekannt vor, oder, Adrian?
Ja. Alltag mittlerweile.
Mhm. Dann das Zitat von Linnea Armstrong. Wenn man einen Teil der Gesellschaft politisch entrechtet und mundtot macht, führt das zu Unzufriedenheit. Das lehrt uns die Geschichte.
Exit Now macht Nägel mit Köpfen von Terry. Ein politisches Buch, ein politisches Lehrstück, würde ich sagen. Auch nicht nur für Leser, junge Leser, sondern auch für Politiker. Hoffentlich im guten Sinne. Und das zweite Buch, das andere Buch, das wir davon gehört haben, war Gelöscht, auch von Terry, ebenso politisch brisant wie das erste. Beide Bücher im Koppenrad Verlag erschienen. Und du hast Terry an der Frankfurter Buchmesse angetroffen, Eva. Das war's also für heute. Podcast-Abenteuer lesen mit dir, Eva Mura. Und meiner Wenigkeit Adrian Plitzko. Besten Dank und wenn Sie noch mehr hören wollen von uns, gehen Sie auf die Webseite www.sbs.com.au/German und klicken Sie auf Themen und dann Abenteuer lesen. Oder sonst finden Sie uns auch auf Ihrem Podcast-Portal. Und bitte weitersagen, dass es uns gibt, damit möglichst viele Leute diese spannenden Bücher auch in die Hände kriegen. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss, Eva.
Servus, Adrian.
Liken, teilen und kommentieren Sie unsere Inhalte bei facebook.com/sbsgerman.